It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, all, I'm John Avalon. Before we dive into our interview with Chris Hughes, co-founder of Facebook, I want to dig into something that's firing me up and should get everybody fired up today, which is the legalization of corruption under the Trump administration. I mean, we're seeing this on every level, and it's a connect the dots moment, but it's worth paying attention to because I do believe that it's going to be the chaos and the cruelty, but the corruption that needs to be where our focus is because it affects everyday folks' lives. It's not right. It's not just by definition. And they're really removing all the guardrails right now. We've seen the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, acting U.S. attorney, resigned the other day under protest because the administration told her to back off the prosecution of Mayor Adams on 5 counts of corruption. She said explicitly, and she's, by the way, is a Republican member of the Federal Society. It's not a Democrat-Republican thing. She said that it was a quid pro quo, that the mayor asked to have his charges taken off the table in exchange for promoting and empowering President Trump policies. That's an assault on the rule of law. But it's not only that. Cory Booker had a list of some of the actions being taken that you might not be paying attention to. Trump firing the head of government ethics, preventing conflicts of interest. That person, gone. It's a 5-year term, gone. Right? Stopping the enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. I mean, that's the law that makes companies, American companies, not engage in corruption. And Trump apparently thinks that that's bad for business, which should tell you everything you need to know. Getting rid of executive orders that stop political appointees from accepting gifts from lobbyists. I mean, these are all just the top line stuff you're not even paying attention to necessarily, certainly not in coordination. And then there's the Republicans rolling over for these cabinet nominees who, by any objective definition, would be seen as unqualified. There's the efforts to gut any organizations that promote democracy from around the world, things that Republicans have traditionally supported, but now they've abandoned as Trump gets ready to do a deal with Putin for the fate of Ukraine, which reminds me of when the Trump administration first incarnation negotiated exclusively with the Taliban over Afghanistan. This corruption is serious business. It should offend anybody who's not operating from primarily a partisan perspective. And it illustrates the sort of low-level danger, the normalization of things that are necessary to keep democratic, lowercase d, democratic guardrails in place. But this is all sort of part of the stakes at a time when we're seeing sort of the tech oligarchs line up to support the administration and having their algorithms do a lot of the dirty work, changing our discourse, getting in the way of us reasoning together. That helps normalize these actions. So it's important you connect the dots. Look at what's actually happening because it's our country. It's our democracy. And it depends on having guardrails to stop corruption. But there are things we can do. And that's the focus of our podcast. We want to focus on how to fix it. We want to focus on solutions to the problems. We can talk about the problems. It's important to connect the dots, but it's more empowering to talk about what we can do. And my guest, Chris Hughes, is a co-founder of Facebook, who says it is time, it is past time to ditch Section 230, something that's had bipartisan support in the past. Ditching Section 230 would change the incentive structure for a lot of these companies to stop elevating the most confrontational and conspiracy theorist voices. It would empower the moderate majority to begin reasoning together again. And that's the kind of action I think we can all get behind. Take a listen. Welcome to How to Fix It, I'm John Avalon, author, journalist, recent congressional candidate, and the purpose of this podcast is to focus on solutions to the problems we face, not simply fixating on the problems themselves. And today, we're joined by Chris Hughes. Chris is a co-founder of Facebook. He's got a brand new Substack, MarketCraft, a book coming out in April, and he's one of the most astute observers of our economy and technology out there today. And given the role that a lot of the tech lords are playing with the Trump administration, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what I want to focus on with you is Section 230. Now, Section 230 is a provision of the 1990s era original Internet Decency Act that basically protects internet companies from being sued. It's an unusual protection that might have made a lot of sense in the early days of this technological revolution. But you say, somewhat to my surprise, this shouldn't be simply reformed. You think Section 230 has outlived its usefulness and should be scrapped altogether. Explain.
That's right. It's a rare agreement with Donald Trump and Mike Johnson and a few other folks who are directly pointed toward that conclusion, too. I think the best place to start might be with a story. It's not a particularly happy one, but it's an important one to tell. So in December of 2021, a girl named Nyla Anderson attempted something called the Blackout Challenge. For those who don't know, it's a game where individuals attempt to cut off oxygen to their brain, either by choking themselves or hyperventilating until they lose consciousness. And Nyla attempted to hang herself after watching a TikTok video that encouraged young people to participate in the challenge. And it's difficult to talk about, but she died. She's 10 years old. So Nyla's mother, Tawina, sued TikTok, arguing that TikTok knew what the Blackout Challenge was, allowed the videos to be posted, and then recommended them to users. The district court initially dismissed the case, citing Section 230. As you say, the law, you know, passed 30 years ago, provides virtually blanket immunity to tech companies for the content posted on the platforms. No other industry has anything comparable. But despite the initial dismissal, Nyla's mother would not be dissuaded. She appealed to the Third Circuit Appellate Court. And guess what? She won. This was last summer. And it's the biggest crack in the history of Section 230 enforcement that we have ever seen. To be clear, the Third Circuit in August ruled in favor of Nyla's mother, which was a breakthrough. They held that, in fact, TikTok can be held liable or could be held liable for the death. And it's because that algorithms, by the nature of selecting some content over others and prioritizing it for view, are expressive content. The platform is making a business and speech decision when it highlights some things over others. And given that, Section 230, which says users can post whatever and you can't sue the platform, isn't applicable here. It's first-party content, new content that TikTok has surfaced, not third. And so it's a path-breaking decision. TikTok has chosen not to appeal, I think because they're afraid of where the U.S. Supreme Court can go. And the reason that it's so important is not only because it brings, one hopes, some level of justice for Nyla's mother, but because it makes this critical distinction between a message board like Prodigy, which was when the law was passed 30 years ago, and what we have today, which are algorithmically driven companies that have become some of the most valuable in the world.
That's an important distinction to really drive home to folks. You can't hold someone who owns a bulletin board accountable for what people post on a bulletin board. I mean, it's the ultimate analog metaphor that was sort of the logical underpinning of the law. Your point is now that that analogy that created the logic around Section 230 30 years ago is utterly unrepresentative of how these companies work. And the algorithms are proprietary choices they are making.
Exactly. The platforms are curating content for all of us to see. And I think you've got to be living under a rock if you think that the internet is a particularly healthy place these days. I mean, it's full of hate. It's full of misinformation. It's full of Cyberbullying, it's full of all kinds of things that we don't love for ourselves and for those of us who are parents for our children. And it isn't just that everybody's always screaming at each other. It's that screaming attracts eyeballs. And the companies know that. And the way that these companies make money, for the most part, is by monetizing our attention. And so we look at the drama, we look at the nastiness. It's a human proclivity to be attracted to some of the most challenging content that's out there, and they feed on that and, you know, make their profits under the guise of they have no, they say, outside of a few carve-outs that the Supreme Court and others have said around child pornography and sexual trafficking, they just throw their hands up and say, oh, it's just what the people are saying. No, it's not. It's what the algorithms are choosing to surface because it attracts the most attention. And that is a corporate decision, a normative decision that they should be held accountable for. And that's the way it is in virtually every other industry.
And the companies presumably would say, well, this interferes with free speech. But just to belabor the core point, for you, they're surfacing content that may be the equivalent civically of yelling fire in a crowded theater, that the attention economy is surfacing the most conspiratorial, confrontational voices to the extent that they're drowning out the rest. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, imagine a park. Everybody can say whatever they want to say. Nobody's calling for censorship here. If you want to say something on Facebook or on TikTok or Instagram or iMessage, you say what you want to say. The equivalent is it's like they're going around handing out megaphones to the people who are the nastiest because they are the most interesting. And so they make a decision to do that. I mean, the algorithms are designed that way. And so I don't want that for my kids. I don't think most people want it, but we generally just feel stuck because we have so little control over what these companies, the decisions that they make. And Section 230 is a big reason why a lot of the people who've been harmed by these decisions have little legal recourse to fix it.
And the example you gave is obviously particularly horrific, but what we've seen is the elevation of extremist groups and extremist ideologies. It has this distorting, dark funhouse mirror effect on our civic debates, and that's what we're trying to sort of claw our way back from. If Section 230 were to be repealed, and previously you mentioned this is a point of overlap you have with some unlikely allies like Speaker Mike Johnson and Donald Trump, it's very unclear, given the realignment of the tech leaders to Trump's fear, that they would still support that. Do you have any reason to believe there's continuity, or do you think this is where you stand as a matter of where you sit and who sits alongside you at your inauguration?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a great question. As we've seen, I think we shouldn't underestimate the kleptocracy and the kleptocratic impulses that Trump and the people around him have. And now that all the tech titans have bent the knee, perhaps he'll change his tune. But in 2020, he did threaten to veto the defense funding bill, a very serious piece of legislation, if it didn't include Section 230 reform. He ended up backing down, but for a long time, he wanted to see the liability shield take away. It wasn't just Trump having this like off the wall idea. You know, Mike Johnson has been on the record for repeal. Even Thune in the Senate Majority Leader, he prefers a kind of method of reform. And Joe Biden has weighed in on the issue as a skeptic as well. So there is a wide bipartisan sense that I think it's fair to say at the least that deciding that tech is for some reason an exceptional industry and should have a blanket liability shield was a step too far. I mean, we don't do that in any industry, in airplanes, banking, food, certainly pharmaceutical, I mean, in malls, you know, other sort of semi-hybrid public-private spaces, they each have sets of requirements and responsibilities for how to manage their products, their services, their spaces, so that it's fair-minded. And we could debate whether sometimes those go too far, sometimes they don't go far enough. But the idea of a blanket shield for tech, given how important it is, just makes a little sense. You know, one of the biggest things that I hear when I talk about this is, well, you don't want the private companies censoring the speech, right? If you repeal Section 230, or the courts say it actually doesn't apply in line with this TikTok case, then you're going to have Mark Zuckerberg or, you know, the CEO of TikTok or whomever deciding what's possible to have on the platform and what's not. And I think that's a straw man argument. I mean, the courts would decide these things through a common law approach, through tort law, over the course of years. There would be all kinds of cases. It would be complex, and we probably would decide that, hey, you know, what we want on WhatsApp is probably different than what's in a feed on Instagram, because WhatsApp is a private message, a semi-private messaging service. And we would develop both case law, or if you want to do it legislatively, obviously that's possible too, that would set out these structures of accountability. So it feels often like a spurious argument to me, because it's not like either the CEOs get to decide or anything goes. There's a lot of space in between.
Right. And that's that middle ground that tends to be where most of us live and where most of us operate. I wonder, are there any specific pieces of legislation you've seen that you favor? And flesh out what are the kind of structures that could be put in place in the competing proposals for algorithm reforms that you think have wisdom? Because the companies view their algorithms as proprietary. You're arguing that they've got a civic responsibility as well. So how is that mediated in a perfect world solution for you?
Yeah, there are a ton of legislative reforms out there, and some folks will be better experts on that than I am. I dispositionally am somewhat skeptical of all of them. I don't love the idea of Congress itself legislating how an algorithm works. Maybe it's my background in tech and business, but I think you want to preserve a lot of flexibility for business leaders to develop their technology in a way that is going to, you know, compete to challenge one another and to provide the best products that out there. You just want them to do it in a way that is reasonable and safe. And so the rub is obviously in defining reasonable and safe. You know, we've spent hundreds of years doing that in the context of the courts. So I think a tort law solution here is actually a feature, not a bug. You know, if we were to repeal Section 230 today, we would revert to a reasonable duty of care standard. Congress might consider a higher standard like we have for product liability or some other things of that nature. But I think we're going to have a standard that is pretty broad-based. And then the courts are going to have to, you know, figure out how to apply that as we go. Another thing that you hear all the time is like, well, how are the companies ever going to be able to manage this on their platforms? How could they ever manage so much what everybody is saying? I'm very impressed by so many of the AI models that have emerged in the past few years, which have already, I think, done a better job at a lot of this than the tech companies. Like if you go to ChatGPT right now and you ask it how to build a bomb, it's going to tell you it cannot help you with that. If you ask it for techniques for cyberbullying on how to undress someone in your class and create a fake image of them and then share, it's going to tell you it can't help you with that. So if ChatGPT can do that, why can't we expect that of Instagram or Facebook? I mean,
that's a great point.
Meta has $62 billion of net income last year, and it's investing 2/3 of it in AI development. You'd think some of that could go in making sure the discourse on a platform is at least not dangerous, if not civil.
Why do you think the AI companies are doing a better job on this front than the platforms?
First off, there are fewer of them. You know, there's a handful of frontier models. And I think there is a sense that the failure to meaningfully regulate social media was a profound mistake. I mean, legislators of both parties in Congress have said that. There's a sense that, like, we sort of missed that. We didn't figure it out, and now it's 20 years too late. And because of that, there's a lot more interest and oversight on AI governance, let's say, in general. Now, that tends to be more on the left than the right, for sure. But there's a sense of momentum on that. And so I think that it's a combination of the leaders of the AI companies do feel a sense of responsibility. I think they do think about the risks of their platforms, including the unintended ones. And they have legislators and regulators watching very closely. You know, we got very close to a major AI regulation bill in California last year. The legislature passed this bill called 1047, which would have done some pretty reasonable things like set up red teaming, registration systems, et cetera. Now, Newsom vetoed it, and even though Elon Musk and others were in favor of it. And so there's a sense of, like, I think the AI companies feel like, hey, we should do the right thing, A, because many of them are parents and they see how social media has evolved. And B, because there are a lot of people who are interested in making this work from a regulatory perspective and a governance perspective sooner than they were ever interested with social media.
Are AI companies covered by Section 230?
Well, that's an open question. I'm not sure how tested it has been in the case law yet. But I'm sure we can get some lawyers who are listening to this to tell us. But in theory, as an internet service provider, one could make an argument that they should be protected, whether or not we want to think that's true or not, because they're using much user-generated content, but they're also refashioning it and creating something original, which seems expressive to me.
Do you favor a degree of algorithm transparency? Some proposals have been that there should be sort of a repository that experts can study to make sure there are no distortions, you know, which raises the question of the proprietary nature of the algorithms being shared. That's one of the sticking points you sometimes hear.
I would say maybe. In general, with regulation of this type, I think you need a clear mission. What are we trying to optimize for here? I think we're trying to create safe platforms that do not highlight and spread dangerous content, content that incites folks to violence or deep, intense emotional harm like cyberbullying. I think that's a kind of mission standard that we should set. And then the way to get there could either be assigned to an existing administrative agency like the Federal Trade Commission, who might have the authority to look either privately or publicly at algorithms to ensure that that's happening. That's possible. It would really depend on the legislative text. Or we could just, again, do it through tort law and set that standard and say, you know, if you own a mall right now and there are a group of people who are, you know, coming in and shoplifting on Tuesday, and then those same people come back on Thursday and Friday, you are legally responsible for preventing that imminent harm. Right. Because you knew it was going to happen. You know, that's, again, through courts and tort law. So why wouldn't that same kind of standard, if you know that the blackout challenge has these profoundly devastating consequences, and you can see it moving on your platform, why would you suggest to a user, I don't care if they're 10 or 70, that would be an enriching video to watch. I mean, so my point is like, I don't know if you need a new administrative agency with algorithmic transparency to get to something that feels, I think, intuitively to many of us, more like common sense.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
So let's go through a couple of proposals that have been put forward on specific issues and just get your take on them. The Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, this came close to passage. Our friend Jonathan Haidt was advocating for it. Speaker Johnson didn't prioritize it. What's your feeling on COSA?
Yeah, I mean, I think children are the easiest place to have a cross-partisan kind of conversation because we all want to protect children. And I think that some of the ideas in COSA, but some of the things that have been enacted in New York state law, which actually prevent social media companies from providing algorithmically determined content unless a parent has opted in, are potentially even more powerful. I think taking a step back, if you are going to offer a service to non-adults, whether it's a service or a product, that's its own legal debate. If you're going to offer Instagram to people who are under 18, I think that should come with extra legal responsibilities that bring about transparency, parental controls, age verification, the kinds of things that are part of COSA and part of a lot of patchwork of different state regulation. I think you could even argue that hardware companies, if you're going to sell an iPhone for someone who's under 18, you could have Apple boxing up one for adults and one for kids that came with very different pre-setting defaults. Now, the question is do you want a law that specifically requires each one of these things? I would prefer something that's more broad-based around like transparency, data collection, privacy, parental controls, age verification. But I think we could craft a market that would be more sensitive to the needs of underage kids than the one that we currently have is.
Let's switch over to TikTok. What's your feeling about the forced sale or closure of TikTok as something owned by Measure, a hostile foreign power that clearly has algorithmic agendas playing out within the American public?
Yeah, well, I was broadly supportive of the law. And now, of course, the concern is, I mean, it's a law that Congress passed and President Biden signed. It is the law of the land. And what I want to know is what is the legal justification for President Trump not enforcing it? I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think there is one. I mean, it's part of the trend of executive actions, which seem to just pass by the will of Congress. And that's just, you know, not how our democratic structure works. So I'm supportive of the law and supportive of, I'm shocked that there isn't more conversation about who might purchase it or buy it. Maybe that comes next. I don't know.
It's only part of the conversation about the danger of the executive branch disregarding the judicial and the congressional. But that's a topic that should preoccupy us all. We're witnessing something different. You know, not that long ago, there was a sense that the platforms wanted to combat extremism, to stop partisan agendas, disinformation and misinformation from hijacking a national conversation. And instead, what we see now, including from your former college roommate, Mark Zuckerberg, is an abandonment of any attempt to fact check. Sometimes it's seen as a step towards free speech. However, it clearly, in the case of X, has succeeded in making that platform ideologically driven according to its owner's intentions. Elon Musk seems to be running a significant amount of the federal government right now. How, when you saw Mark Zuckerberg's sort of abandonment of fact-checking in favor of a community notes, help us make sense of that evolution based on your knowledge of the man.
Well, listen, I haven't spoken to Mark in 5 years since I wrote the antitrust piece arguing for structural separation for breakup of Facebook in 2009. So there are a lot of other people you could have on your podcast who could tell you more about what he's thinking right now. I think that's for sure.
I think more about the bedrock, not about his current state. Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised because it feels like there is this, you know, broad-based trend in Silicon Valley to lurch towards Trump. There are several things going on. There is a real sense that from 2020 onward, the constraints on the power of CEOs were consistently increasing. All of a sudden, they had to implement diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, which I don't think a lot of them were all that genuinely interested in. They had to follow what the Biden White House wanted them to do on COVID vaccines. Over time, they grew increasingly frustrated with the antitrust cases, and they felt persecuted by Lina Khan and Jonathan Cantor and others. They were wary of making acquisitions for fear of pissing off folks in Washington. There was this sense of what, you know, I think Zuckerberg has called a loss of masculinity, like this fantasy of like, well, the big guy can just, we should be able to do what we want to do. And now Trump has given them a permission structure to return to something much more basic. I mean, it's hard not to see it as a kind of regression. And it's sad on a personal level, to be honest, for me to see, not just with Mark, but with others as well. But it also is pretty outrageous. It's angering because these platforms really matter, obviously. They are, you know, we live our lives through the internet and through social media. And to say that we're just going to throw up our hands and say, well, we can't really fact check, even though Pew and so many of these independent studies were showing somewhat conclusively that Facebook was tending to take things that were much more questionable and deprecate them out in the algorithms and boost things that felt more widely respected, that we just can't do any of it, so we're just going to let it all flow. Of course, it's not like they can hold their hands up. There are still algorithms making these decisions. It's just that those algorithms will now be pointed towards back to the things that feel the most outrageous, the most thinly supported, and the things that will garner all the eyeballs so that everybody can go in their corner and we can all fight each other. And so I think it's saddening and angering, and it's one of the reasons why I'm on the podcast today, because there's a better way.
Yeah. Repealing Section 230 would actually adjust the incentive structure almost wholesale. around what is currently seems to be a springtime for disinformation, misinformation, and conspiracy theories.
Absolutely.
That's the core point. People respond to incentives. Corporations respond to incentives. And that's the purpose of common sense guardrails.
Exactly. And they have the power. If you can see a conspiracy theory is, you know, blowing up in size and proportion, and you know that it's not right, the algorithm does not have to keep that thing blowing up. It's not serving anyone well. It's harming all of us. Of course, the rub becomes like, what's a conspiracy theory and what's not? And that's a spectrum. Sometimes that's harder to figure out than other cases, but a lot of the time it's not. And they have a responsibility to do it.
How concerned are you, given the environment, about the danger of media capture, or at least the underlying danger that we'll be unable to reason together as democracies need to do, given that it seems like at least the owners of these corporations have all backed Trump in a decided shift?
I'm very concerned about that. I think we all know the arguments that civil discourse is breaking down because we listen to the people that we agree with. You know, I'm finishing a PhD at Wharton, and so I had the opportunity to interact with undergraduates a lot. I talked to one this morning who was born in 2006, because I was talking to her about the Obama campaign, and then I realized that she was not yet a toddler. And yet, she and others that I interact with seem to be highly aware of the fact that it's so easy to get information from the people that they agree with, and they want out. If you talk to them about the addictiveness of these platforms and the filter bubble nature of it, they get it. And it's, you know, they have practices. They try to, like, just like I, you know, will read Fox News or go to the Wall Street Journal, places that I might not always agree with. They're trying to develop these practices. So I find that hopeful. That's why I'm talking about it. In the midst of like a world where we are all in our own corners a lot of the time, I think that there's an awareness that that's going on, a desire to change that, to escape that institutionally. And so perhaps we can make some progress on those fronts, but it does require the fundamental institutional structure of our democracy enduring and remaining strong. And it feels difficult this week, this month, to rely on that. And so a lot is going to need to go right.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Let's shift over to your new Substack, the work you've been doing around sort of strengthening these guardrails, advancing a vision of stakeholder capitalism that would presumably be a counterweight to some of the divisions, economic as well as cultural, that are undermining our democracy as you see it. Explain to folks the purpose behind MarketCraft and your vision of stakeholder capitalism.
So I had this book coming out in April. It's called, as you say, it's called Market Crafters, The 100-Year Struggle to Shape the American Economy. And it's a story of it's a collection of stories, actually, of about a dozen state entrepreneurs in government who harness the power of markets to achieve some political end. So to give you a crisp example, I have a chapter on a Republican libertarian who helped the United States navigate the energy crises in the 1970s. Or the founder of Intel, Robert Noyce, who in the 1980s managed to cobble together a Reagan-era industrial policy to enhance chip manufacturer, semiconductor manufacturer here at home. And then we go to the contemporary day, we go back to the New Deal. It's a big book. But the point of it is to say that in America, we have a long tradition of managing our economies to make sure that they work for us. we are exiting this 40-year period where all the economists said that the only thing that we could care about was GDP. It's got to be higher. It's got to be higher. It's got to be higher. If you're worried about, you know, crises or you're worried about unemployment, those are just, you know, problems with the system, and perhaps you can redistribute some money. That paradigm, I think, fortunately, is fading. And in its place is a more confident view that no, markets work for us. Capitalism needs to be managed and in many cases cared for to be more fair and more dynamic. And that's a joint public and private partnership. So, you know, the book and then the Substack that you mentioned and some and much of the other work that I'm doing is really answering the question, when we manage markets well, what are the ingredients? What do we have to do? And when we fail, because we do fail a lot of the time, why do we fail? And I think teasing out some of those lessons can help us inform. And by the way, this is a bipartisan set of questions. You know, Trump's out there pushing for a sovereign wealth fund to help harness the power of markets for the common good. And like that idea in and of itself is a bipartisan one that Democrats have supported and I'm supportive of. I don't really trust it in Trump's hands, to be honest. But my point is like market craft, I think, is the insurgent philosophy on how to do economics well on the left and the right. And the faster we get smart on it, the better off we'll be.
Well, the whole purpose of this is a conversation around bipartisan solutions. I wonder, given that you think that a lot of what the Biden administration was steps in the right direction, the reshoring of essential manufacturing, the CHIPS Act, why do you think there was not the electoral reward? There was not a perception that these ideas were working to help the people they were intending to help in a time when the middle class has been getting squeezed for decades.
Yeah, I think there's two things. They're both somewhat in plain sight. Everything's too expensive. The cost of living has just accelerated, and it's everything from eggs to coffee to housing to childcare. You know, for poor people, it's too expensive. For a lot of middle-class people and even upper-middle-class people, it's just too expensive, and people are angry about that. And Biden was in office when the cost surge happened, and people blame him for it. You know, the empirical analyses of how much did the stimulus cause it. You know, we peaked at 9% inflation, and the best guesses are about 1% to 2% of that was part of that stimulus package. So my point is like, things would have been very expensive even if this particular Biden policies wouldn't have happened. So I think there's real anger about that. And then I think we didn't have a communicator in the White House. Biden failed to explain the set of policies. He failed to connect with American people. He kept telling people they were wrong. The economy is great. The economy is great. That's not how people feel. And you don't win elections on that. And of course, then Harris picked up that message and didn't sufficiently distinguish herself as a change candidate. And Trump won. So it's obviously all clear in the rear view. And I didn't see it so clearly at the time. But I guess that's my fundamental analysis of what happened. Not like, oh, if only we hadn't done the semiconductor or the climate policy. With our political, I think those were good policies that have had some challenges, but that's not why Trump is president.
No one expects you to have a crystal clear crystal ball, but I really do think your new Substack, your upcoming book, all speaks to in upcoming books on abundance by Ezra Klein and Thompson. I mean, there is a movement that we should lean into that's focused on solutions, on harnessing market forces, on strengthening guardrails so our economy and our democracy can work again. And I think your call, given your position and experience to repeal Section 230, is itself something that should wake people up about the possibilities to change the incentive structure and to get us back on a more healthy, constructive course. Chris Hughes, thanks a lot. Appreciate you joining us on How to Fix It.
Thank you so much for having me.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.